The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to The Christian Outlook, the weekly radio program that sorts through the issues in our fast-changing world in a way that honors your Christian faith. This week in The Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, I'm Kevin McCullough, and it's great to be with you. This week, the House of Representatives passes the Equality Act.
There's nothing equal in this act.
We'll get analysis.
I feel like I'm participating in an Orwellian experiment where I'm calling Equality Act something that it really isn't. It's an inequality act.
The Lifetime Channel drops the Christian program Truths That Transform.
We have just lost about 65% of our broadcast platform by them refusing to accept our programming and exercising what is no question is viewpoint discrimination.
And Amazon drops the book on gender from Ryan Anderson.
These are not your grandparents' liberals we're dealing with anymore.
We've got all this and more. I'm Kevin McCullough, your host, coming to you from my home station in New York City, where you can hear my own program live each weekday afternoon on AM 570 and FM 102.3, The Mission. Take a moment to follow The Christian Outlook on Twitter at TC Outlook and follow me on Parler at KMC Radio. We begin in Washington, D.C., and a piece of legislation each of you ought to be tracking with. It's called the Equality Act. It's been introduced a number of times in recent years, going back to 2015 and the 114th Congress. It was introduced again this Congress, passing the House in largely party-line votes on February 25th. What's different this time is the composition of the U.S. Senate, and of course, the president is now Joe Biden. I turned to Cissy Graham Lynch, granddaughter to the late Billy Graham, who is now serving with the Billy Graham Association and Samaritan's Purse. A lot of people hear the term Equality Act and they say, well, this must be about equality, so it must be good. And the average American, beyond that headline, that little phrase, probably doesn't go any deeper than that. Why should we? What's in this bill?
Yeah, this is a danger. There's nothing equal in this act. And it does sound wonderful. I was just getting my hair done at a salon about 30 minutes ago, and I was talking to a lady who had never heard about it. And when you talk about it, you know, we talk about this will be very dangerous if people face. It is the most invasive threat we have seen to religious liberty ever proposed in America. It's what Andrew Walker said. But I challenge this woman, this will affect not only Christians and people of faith, this affects everybody. It affects their ability to make decisions for their businesses, and it definitely would punish and penalize those who do not agree with this new sexual norms of gender theory that is going on.
Right. Well, and by that, we know that the president has issued all these executive orders forcing biological males to be allowed to compete athletically against biological females. But in this case, it goes beyond an executive order and actually gets codified into law. An executive order, the next president could come along and undo whatever Joe Biden did. But if this passes and the president signs it, it then becomes something that Congress has to undo the next time around.
Yeah, I want to encourage, this affects everybody. You know, whether you're a baker, you're a florist, you're a photographer, no matter what your business, we look at like at our insurance companies, this will affect you. You have a medical practice, this is going to affect you. Whether you have a restaurant and there's a hostess position open and the 6'4 man dressed as a woman comes in and wants to be your hostess, well, you're going to have to hire him now. You will not be able to hire him because you wouldn't want him as the first face you see in the small business you put all your money into. It takes away your ability to make the decision what's best for your business. And it sounds great. You know, I just encourage this woman. She had a daughter who's 13 years old. They are leaving to go to play softball this weekend in a tournament. And I asked her, you know, she had no idea what's going on. So I encourage people to have this conversation with those who are not informed of what's going on. You know, I made it personal to her. She asked me what I did for a living and what interview I had coming up. And I told her, and I said, you have a 13-year-old daughter who plays softball. Would you be okay if she got cut from the team because there was a boy that was better than her, but he identified as a woman. She goes, no, never. That's wrong. You know, so like people who are not even Christians, this is going to affect people. You know, right now, a good conversation starter is Mr. Potato Head. Nobody yes. agrees with Mr. Potato Head. This is ludicrous. It is not common sense. In the salon, a very liberal salon I go to, they were in uproar over Mr. Potato Head today.
As we see this sort of legislation making progress through Congress, many Americans of religious conviction will be asking, how does this affect me? Gino Gerasi turned to Jim Dennison of the Dennison Forum. From 94.7 FM, The Word in Denver.
You know, we were talking a little bit off the air, and I mentioned that Jack Phillips is coming out with his book. He obviously won at the Supreme Court level on refusing to bake a cake for a homosexual couple. Photographers, bakers, florists, what will this bill do for those men and women who opt out for religious conviction? Does this mean religious conviction as a category no longer exists in America?
Relative to LGBTQ issues, that's exactly what it means. It expressly, explicitly prohibits what Jack Phillips did. He would have lost his case under the Equality Act as it currently stands. That's exactly precisely the case.
Because the Supreme Court would have to make a ruling based on law.
That's right. That's precisely true. The way to look at this that kind of makes some sense of it out of this, we're wondering, why would people do this? Why would people be such an assault on religious liberty, a lot of whom claim to be practicing Christians? Well, for those people on the other side of this, they see my position, your position on LGBTQ, the way we would see someone who was a racist. If a KKK member was wanting to appeal to religious liberty to cover their bigotry for burning crosses in somebody's front yard, we'd obviously say that ought not to be allowed. If a Christian scientist wanted to use religious freedom to keep their children from getting medical practice, or if a Jehovah's Witness wanted to use the religious freedom to keep from a blood transfusion for a patient, we would say that ought not be allowed. That's how they see our appeal to religious freedom in the context of LGBTQ issues.
Oh,
so
no.
They intend expressly to remove it for that reason.
Yeah, and I get that. I actually really do get that. I read Carl Truman's book, and he gives us the sort of philosophical and ideological framework in order to process this information. But yet, Jim, I can't help but think something has happened. So we have crossed a Rubicon, so to speak, a threshold where the world, from an ideological standpoint, from a worldview standpoint, is substantially different. One of the things, now help me understand this, and please tell me I'm wrong. Does this legislation also allow males to enter girls' locker rooms, males participate in sports? And is it literally written in such a way to silence everyone who disagrees with this ruling? Or with
I would
this
love
law?
To tell you you're wrong, but you're right.
Oh, no, I don't want to be right about this.
A full spectrum of what is considered to be civil rights relative to transgender individuals. So that's sports, that's biological women having to compete against biological men for scholarships. You're talking about locker rooms. You're talking about children's showers. You're talking about the documented abuses of biological males claiming to be women and then moving into single-sex shelters, let's say, and they're required by law to be allowed to do that. That's absolutely part of this. In fact, one of the pushbacks to the Equality Act is from a group of individuals who call themselves radical feminists who are saying this is absolutely an attack on women's rights, irrespective of religious freedoms, for the very reason you just documented.
Now, as we go through this litany of challenges, does this also mean that faith-based foster and adoption agencies are at real risk?
It absolutely does. If you're in a foster or in a adoption service and you have a religious ideology that is in some way not aligned with LGBTQ activism, then you're very much at risk. If Equality Act passes, it is now, gets to adjudication, becomes the law of the land, then you would simply not be allowed to so-called discriminate against same-sex couples or any other LGBTQ individuals in the context of adoption, regardless of your faith-based beliefs upon which your organization was founded. That's absolutely true.
We were talking a little bit about, I don't even know how to say this. It's not just a change. We're talking about a shift, a civilizational change. And I'm really reluctant to even call the Equality Act the Equality Act. I feel like I'm participating in an Orwellian experiment where I'm calling Equality Act something that it really isn't. It's an inequality act. And Dr. Jim Dennison, we talked about denying parental rights. We talked about introducing explicit content in school curriculum. We didn't talk about abortions, and there's so many things that this thing does that we didn't talk about. Before we continue, we touch on a couple of other things that we literally need to be aware of, like right now.
You bet. One of them is abortion. If, in fact, this passes as it is now, then sex, as it's defined in the act, would be protected class and all issues related to that, among which are medical conditions. So already two courts have decided that abortion qualifies as a medical condition relative to female sex. If that logic prevails, then abortions would then be a protected class of behavior and activity. They could be tax supported, tax protected, and so many of the restrictions that states are passing would be in question, because this would be federal law and it could trump any state regulations that could be in place.
And in the past, people would say, call your congressman, call your representative. It obviously, I think millions of people did call their congressmen and their senators, expressing their disgust and deep concern over the Equality Act. Is there something else we can, obviously we pray, but what else can we do?
Yeah, that's a great point. Obviously, first we pray. Second, we reach out to our senators. In fact, we even had a form on our website a week or so ago that you could adopt to mail to the senators. Franklin Graham had a call today for contacting your senators about this. John Stonestreet's been discussing this as well. So we certainly can be doing all of that. But then on the third level, I think, and it's back to what we said a moment ago, we have to be living in a world that says, all right, if some version of this becomes a reality, what should I be doing now? What should my church be doing to get ready? What should my Christian school be doing to get ready? If you're not consulting attorneys, at that point, you should be. There are things you can be doing right now to get ready for civil challenges, for court challenges. There are ways you can be strengthening your own confession of faith. There are ways you can be looking at your own HR policies. We went through a whole HR review in our ministry a year ago.
Wow.
In the light of this, to make certain we were ready for if and when this became a reality. There are ways to get prepared for this. I'm not predicting. In its current context, it'll pass adjudication. I think there's a strong argument it'll be declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. So I'm certainly not here to say that this will necessarily become law as it is, but the trajectory is the point, and the trajectory is clear, and we have to be prepared for what that's going to look like for us in the coming days.
Yeah, it seems like a thorny issue as we ask and answer the question, because the Supreme Court seems to have been open to the idea of protecting oppression, whatever form that it takes, but yet they too aren't willing to concede that America becomes a valueless and ideologically disconnected from a Judeo-Christian worldview, that this Supreme Court, at least in the majority, seems to hold on to the hope that, yes, Christians can still be Christians in a constitutional republic.
Exactly right. Even Anthony Kennedy, that wrote this majority position for Obergefell, made it clear he did not want this to impinge upon religious liberty, same in the Bostock. So there is hope there. And, of course, our ultimate hope is in Jesus.
Coming up, a Christian television program loses their platform on the Lifetime Channel.
These are not your grandparents' liberals we're dealing with anymore.
The Christian Outlook returns in a moment.
In times of political polarization and uncertainty, possessing a deep understanding of America's constitutional principles and how they apply to today's policy debates will be essential to ensuring the future of our nation. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. As a program that prepares tomorrow's public leaders to balance this understanding with the latest tools of policy analysis, we've sent over 1,000 alumni to lead in places ranging from Capitol Hill to Sacramento and nonprofits worldwide. Through our unique liberal arts curriculum, we teach critical thinking and the ability to understand how the other side thinks on an array of policy issues. Do you know someone considering graduate school? Would you like to become a supporter of our unique mission? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to The Christian Outlook. I'm Kevin McCullough. Truths That Transform is the radio and television ministry of the late D. James Kennedy. You can catch them on cable television channels across the nation. One of the major outlets is, or I should say was, the Lifetime Channel. Frank Wright is the host of the program. He also serves as president and CEO of the ministry. He was a guest of my colleague in Tampa, Florida, Bill Bunkley, on Faith Talk WTBN.
What's up with Lifetime TV that you can't have a celebration broadcast about George Washington? What is going on here?
I hope that's not the only question you have, Bill, because I'm not sure I've got an answer. We've been on Lifetime for nearly 3 years. It's a national cable network that reaches about 110 million homes. We've been very happy with our relationship with them. They've been good to us. We've tried to be good to them as well. But the end of January, we aired a program on the sanctity of human life, which they objected to. They said, we find your depictions to be too graphic. There were no graphic images. It was a description of David Dalyden and the hidden camera effort to uncover Planned Parenthood selling baby body parts. Everything's been documented. This has all been in the public arena. They objected and told us, point blank, you will not air any more programs on abortion. Well, we held our peace, but they said, we want you to send us the next three programs you're going to do. Well, the next one was the one you and I talked about last, Bill, which was Billionaire Radical, George Soros and the scheme to remake America. No, you're not going to air that. What about George Soros and his influence on the media? No, you're not going to air that. What about the spiritual life of George Washington? No, you're not going to air that.
Wow.
And so we are off of the Lifetime Network. They have forced us off, essentially saying that none of our programming is acceptable to them any longer. By the way, all of these programs that I mentioned have aired on the network before. Billionaire Radical aired on Lifetime in October. The Spiritual Life of George Washington, we aired a variation of that program, you know, in the last couple of years. None of this is new. What's different? Well, I think there was an inauguration on January 20th. That's what's different. There's a new administration in the Justice Department. That's what's different. And so the gloves have come off, and the cancel culture is in full swing. And we have just lost about 65% of our broadcast platform by them refusing to accept our programming and exercising what is no question is viewpoint discrimination.
You know, I was just thinking a couple of days ago about my good friend Ryan Anderson. Writes his book. It's about transgender. This is a topic. Amazon's been selling it for 3.5 years. All of a sudden, it's got content problems. And then we look at your situation. Do you even have a hunch that somewhere there was this confab of Marxists and socialists in this country? And once Mr. Biden was certified, and I call him King Biden, I don't call him President Biden, not out of disrespect with all the executive orders, my word, it's like he's running the kingdom. But my point is, it seems like this is all orchestrated. This is a conspiracy. And all of these threads have come together. And I think that there ought to be at least some sort of investigation on how all of these are working in tandem right now.
Well, Bill, you know, you're familiar with the old expression, just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get me. And all we have to do is dial back the calendar to January of 2017 at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel in Washington, D.C., just days after Donald Trump was inaugurated. George Soros met with 80 of his closest billionaire friends, and they committed to destroy Donald Trump and to assure that he would not be reelected to a second term. And they laid out a strategy by which they would do that. And I have no doubt in my mind that having seen the Democrats take control of the White House through President Biden and whoever's pulling on the strings behind him, that they also had another meeting shortly after the inauguration in which they planned the assault that we're seeing now, an assault on speech, an assault on really an assault on the marketplace of ideas. You and I, Bill, have made most of our ministry career has been possible by the free marketplace of ideas.
Yes.
It's no longer free. It's now closed to some. Between Amazon and what we're seeing now happening on broadcast platforms, these are the new digital book burners who are arising and deciding which content the people will be allowed to hear and which content will be kept from them.
Frank Wright just referred to Amazon and the digital book burners that we are seeing today. He was referring to the book on the transgender movement by Ryan Anderson, When Harry Became Sally. Up until 2 weeks ago, you could get the book on Amazon. Carl Truman of Grove City College joined my colleagues out of Pittsburgh and Word FM, John Hall and Kathy Emmons.
It would seem, Carl, that any self-respecting, you know, classical liberal or even contemporary liberal would say, when I ask the question, are you in favor of banning books? But with an organization as big as Amazon and Apple to follow it up, just deciding not to publish this volume is, in a sense, doing that.
Yes, and I think the answer is these are not your grandparents' liberals we're dealing with anymore. I would consider myself in many ways to be a traditional liberal.
So would I.
On that front, a big believer in freedom of speech, freedom of religion. The best way to drive out bad ideas is to allow everybody to have their say and allow the good ideas to come to the fore and inevitably triumph. But that's not the world we live in now. We live in a world where big tech companies, I think, are increasingly going to be censoring the information to which we get access and the kind of arguments that we're allowed to look at.
Right. So we all feared George Orwell's 1984, the idea of Big Brother. Big Brother, we always thought was going to be government. Little did we know that it was going to be tech companies that are going to rule the roost. So what does that mean, Carl? I mean, the idea that a book that does not agree with those who are in power, that is now disappearing, we are not allowed to have this conversation. To speak about transgenderism in less than praising terms is something that is verboten in this society we live in today.
Yes, and that's a very dangerous place to be in. Now, it's one thing, if you like, for the government to be passing legislation or things, and that can be worrying enough, but at least when you're dealing with a government, there are periodic elections, and if you don't like what's going on, you can cast your vote and try to get rid of them. When you're dealing with what are effectively unaccountable tech companies, it's a whole different ballgame. First of all, the First Amendment doesn't apply because these are not agencies of the federal government. And secondly, it's not immediately obvious how one can resist them. I mean, Amazon dominates the book-selling market and therefore has huge influence with publishers. No publisher is going to publish a book that they don't think they can market on Amazon. They're on a hiding to nothing at that point.
So I wonder what the current thinking on that is. Now, I certainly understand that people who are running big tech companies aren't going to be supportive of Ryan T. Anderson's point of view, but that's fine. You know, Amazon posts Mein Kampf, right? Last time I looked, it had like 4 stars, and I don't think they, you know, appreciate his approach either.
No, one would hope not.
Yes, I'm assuming that they don't.
We can assume they don't, but in the last 5 or 6 weeks, I've had must have half a dozen emails from Amazon encouraging me to buy a book on technology by a Theodore Kaczynski. And if you look up Theodore
Wait, that's the Unabomber, right?
He's the Unabomber, yes. So Amazon are not only selling the Unabomber stuff, they're actively promoting it, which makes the ban on Ryan Anderson ironic. Even worst case scenario, Ryan Anderson is less likely to kill as many people as Adolf Hitler or even Ted Kaczynski, I think. So why is he banned? It's a fascinating question.
Coming up.
If we simply cave in to big tech, then we've lost already.
More with Carl Truman when the Christian Outlook returns in a moment. Welcome back to The Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. I'm Kevin McCullough. Roughly half of the books sold in our country today are sold on Amazon. When it comes to ebooks, Amazon's share is well over 80%. So when Amazon chooses not to carry your book, you're going to have a hard time getting access to the markets of consumers who are buying books today. It's just one more window in the power of Amazon and big tech today. A power that is absolutely enormous. Let's pick up the conversation of Carl Truman with John Hall and Kathy Emmons.
Okay, so then the book, Ryan Anderson's book, When Harry Became Sally. Talk to us about this. I mean, look, if you are a transgendered adult, or if you're an adult thinking about transitioning, you go for it. But the problem is, when this is sold to children, some as young as 4 years of age, that, you know, this is a good thing to do. This is an okay thing to do. We lift you up as a hero somehow. That's where the problem is. It's being sold to children as you can find your own inner joy or your own peace by switching, you know, sexes and allowing yourself to be mutilated, whether it's through your reduction of breasts or your genitalia.
Yes, and I think that came out very clearly last week with Rand Paul's questioning of Dr. Levine at her Senate confirmation hearing, when he was repeatedly pressing on the good doctor the question of genital mutilation and the authority, the responsibility, the competence of children to make that kind of life-changing decision at such an early age. And Levine's adamant refusal to answer the questions and to answer the testimonies and answer the statistics that he was provided indicated that there was no answer. The evidence clearly points towards somebody stepping up and being the adult in the room and taking responsibility here. It's obviously not going to be Dr. Levine or the government on this one.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about two issues. Both, I think, are of great interest. One is the issue of transgenderism, especially when it comes to medical treatments applied to children. And then the other question is just why we're concerned about banning books, or why we're thinking that the best way to approach any issue whatsoever is to just have people not understand different sides of it.
Yeah, and of course, the history of censorship is not a great one, because by and large, when things get censored in history, they tend to take on a life of their own anyway. My own area of expertise is the Reformation. You know, the Catholics typically burned books. Martin Luther would reprint Catholic books with his own introduction to them. He would subvert them. Hmm. And ultimately, Luther wins. Censorship can be a very counterproductive thing in the long run. So there's a sense in which Amazon's approach here, it represents massive corporate power, but also intellectual bankruptcy, I think. And in the long run, it will not, sure. I don't think it will serve them or the society that they claim to be serving well.
Yeah, I don't believe it will either. It is hard, though, to get our heads around the place that we're in, where an organization like Amazon carries this much weight economically.
Yes, and this is where I think I'm not a huge government stepping in and doing stuff at every opportunity sort of guy, but I do think that a very good argument could be made for breaking up some of these big tech monopolies. If we're in a situation where a man who refuses to bake a cake for a gay wedding finds himself dragged before the courts, that's one man, one cake shop in one city. Surely there's a case for some kind of government or legal intervention when we're dealing with what is functionally a monopoly of bookselling in the United States.
Yes. So, Carl, like yourself and the circles that you work in academia, you know, obviously with your new book, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, you spent a considerable amount of time in research, in thought, and then in writing. This may have taken you, I don't know, a year, two, perhaps three or more, or maybe a lifetime of thought. So other men and women, other authors who would propose this idea in their own mind and then seeing themselves struck down by Amazon and the inability to get those ideas out into the marketplace, if that would come to the fore, many more people would say, you know, I shouldn't bother to waste my time in trying to get something out. Maybe I'll focus on a different subject, because in the end, no one will hear or read about this in the first place. So it's just not worth it.
Yeah, and that, you know, that there's a real serious issue there, that this could strangle free inquiry and free thought in a big way. I would say to people who are thinking that way, though, you need to think freely. You need to get your stuff out there. Think about life behind the Iron Curtain. Now, thankfully, we don't live in anything like the Soviet bloc. But the bottom line was, it was vital that those underground presses kept working. It was vital that there was a Samizdat culture there, keeping free thought, free inquiry alive. So I would say we may be moving into an era where we have to think about alternative ways of doing our research, getting our research out, keeping free thought alive. But we have to do it, because if we simply cave in to big tech, then we've lost already. I think we have to face reality as it is and see how we can press back.
Coming up.
And if at the end we have to leave the building to bats, we'll do that rather than to pivot away from clear biblical doctrine.
Albert Mohler when the Christian Outlook returns in a moment.
In times of political polarization and uncertainty, possessing a deep understanding of America's constitutional principles and how they apply to today's policy debates will be essential to ensuring the future of our nation. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. As a program that prepares tomorrow's public leaders to balance this understanding with the latest tools of policy analysis, we sent over 1,000 alumni to lead in places ranging from Capitol Hill to Sacramento and nonprofits worldwide. Through our unique liberal arts curriculum, we teach critical thinking and the ability to understand how the other side thinks on an array of policy issues. Do you know someone considering graduate school? Would you like to become a supporter of our unique mission? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Christian Outlook. I'm Kevin McCullough. Major evangelical adoption agency will now serve gay parents nationwide. That was the headline from the New York Times on Monday this week. The story was about Bethany Christian Services, the largest Protestant ministry in our nation providing adoption and foster services. So the news was big news. Albert Mohler commented on this pivot in his briefing program.
Bethany pivoted. In this case, the organization is Bethany Christian Services, that had been one of the nation's largest evangelical adoption and foster care agencies. And the pivot has to do with the LGBTQ issues, in particular the fact that yesterday it was announced that Bethany Christian Services is going to now begin providing services to LGBTQ parents nationwide. This, according to Ruth Graham of the New York Times. This is defined in the New York Times article as, quote, a major inflection point in which the fraught battle over many faith-based agencies' longstanding opposition to working with same-sex couples, end quote. The New York Times article by Ruth Graham includes this paragraph, quote, Bethany's new approach is something of a tightrope act, an attempt to establish a clear, consistent policy of inclusion that does not rattle its core constituencies, including the churches that are its primary venue for recruiting parents. The inclusivity resolution passed in January eliminated the 2007 position statement on marriage being between one man and one woman. But the new statement does not endorse same-sex relationships. In fact, it does not even mention them, end quote. Now, here's what I want us to note. You don't have to say we're endorsing same-sex marriage if you abandon your convictional statement that marriage can only be the union of a man and a woman. It's not as if the world doesn't understand what we're doing, and it's not as if Christians don't understand what Bethany here has done. They've not taken no position. They have taken a very clear position, identified here as consistent, inclusive policies. What's gone is the position statement on a biblical understanding of marriage. It simply disappeared. But the statement that was released by the organization and its 14-member national board, quote, Christians of mutual good faith can reasonably disagree on various doctrinal issues about which Bethany does not maintain an organizational position, end quote. That's extremely slick language. Now, that sentence is self-evidently true. When you're an adoption agency, you don't have to take a position on the rapture, on the millennium. But if you are operating as a Christian institution and you are dealing with adoption and foster care, not having a biblical definition of marriage is not the same thing as reasonably disagreeing on a doctrinal issue. But there's more to it than that. Just how expansive can we follow any argument that says that Christians of good faith can reasonably disagree on various doctrinal issues? Again, are we talking about some kind of doctrinal dispute that might divide, say, Methodists from Baptists or Presbyterians from Methodists? Are we talking about something as large as what would separate Protestants from Catholics or Catholics from the Orthodox churches? No, we're not talking about that kind of doctrine. Here, the only doctrinal issue that is at stake is the Christian church's definition of marriage, about which every single major Christian church throughout the two millennia of Christian history has been absolutely united. This has not been a doctrinal disagreement. The New York Times is unquestionably right in saying that Bethany Christian Services is here trying to achieve something of a tightrope act. But here's where Christians need to understand that this is not just about looking at one institution's pivot or capitulation on this issue. It's understanding the pressure that is brought on and will be brought on every single Christian congregation, every single denomination, every single Christian institution or ministry, period. And the demand is going to come just with the argument that you see here. Serving children, one person connected with the organization said, shouldn't be controversial. No, serving children shouldn't be controversial. But then again, it is when you have to ask the question, into what kind of family can Christians support children being placed? eventually you have to answer that question. And it does come down to whether or not you believe that the Bible offers what is not only a doctrinally binding definition, but what is actually good for, even necessary for, the human family to flourish. But this is exactly the kind of argument that's going to come. Helping people means that you need to help more people, even if that means forfeiting your Christian convictions, even about what it means to help people. It means that if you have a homeless shelter, you can help more homeless people if you will abandon your Christian convictions and no longer maintain any commitment to a biblical standard of morality that might lead a state or local government to say, we won't partner with you if you hold those convictions. So abandon the convictions in the name of helping people. Expand this to Christian higher education. Think of how many more students you could teach and how many more people you could reach within your institution, and by the way, charge for tuition, if you abandon your Christian convictions in the name of just teaching more people. Yes, you can understand the argument that's being made here, but we need to recognize that what it is a recipe for the absolute dissolution of Christianity in the United States in terms of any real witness, not only in the public square, but frankly, even within our own ministries. But all of this in the context we face right now, with the threat of the Equality Act now politically hanging over us in an imminent way, considering the forces of coercion from higher academia, from Hollywood, from just about every sector coming in on us, and understand that the pressure to pivot is going to just increase exponentially nearly with every passing hour or day or week or month. And eventually, every single Christian ministry, every Christian school, organization, college, university, every denomination and congregation is going to have to make a decision about what we will do when that ultimate demand for a pivot point comes. We have to decide if we will pivot or not. And at this point, I simply want to quote scripture and a scripture that's familiar with you. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. When it comes to Christian institutions, including institutions such as the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and Boyce College, I think I can speak for not only my own role as president, but for the Board of Trustees, and behind that, the churches of the Southern Baptist Convention, to say that if this is demanded of us, we will not pivot. We need to say that in advance. We need to mean it in advance. We need to understand that the demand for that pivot point will come. But I'll also say something else. We're not going to surrender before the fight. We're going to see the fight through all the way to the end. And if at the end we have to leave the building to bats, we'll do that rather than to pivot away from clear biblical doctrine. For almost 30 years now in this role, I have said that out loud. I have said it in public. I've said it on the record. And I've said it with others of equal conviction and determination. And we need to say this out loud. We need to make this affirmation clear and public. We need to be on the record before someone calls us to put us on the record. And if necessary, someday, we might have to play this back for ourselves, just to remind ourselves, this is the commitment. This is the truth. This is where we stand. This is decidedly where we will not and cannot pivot.
Coming up, Christian faithfulness.
We've spent the last several decades, I think, capitulating to our culture, trying to figure out how to get the culture to like us. And I think we've got an assignment to hold out the truth for the world we live in.
Pastor Alan Jackson, in the final segment of the Christian Outlook. Stay with us.
Before I spoke a word, you were singing over me.
Welcome back to the Christian Outlook. I'm Kevin McCullough. The last 12 months have presented the church with numerous challenges. A pandemic that has left many churches unable to meet in person, and a country that is increasingly hostile to the same Christian faith. How should the believer respond? Alan Jackson, the voice of Alan Jackson Ministries, joined my colleague in Los Angeles, Frank Sontag.
The state of the country right now seems to be very tenuous at best, especially as it applies to the move of secularism, anti-God. What about our country and the times we live? What can you share with us as we begin this interview?
Well, I think you're accurate. It is a very tenuous time. I think what happened with COVID has begun to awaken the church. And I don't think the outcome is clear yet, whether we will humble ourselves and repent so that God can restore us, or if we'll have to walk through a season of judgment. And I pray that we'll continue to turn our hearts to Him in new ways and give Him first place in our lives, because I think without that, we've got a very difficult season ahead of us.
How has the season of COVID, if you will, challenged you in your pastoral role and to preach the Word of God, or has it?
Well, I think it's challenged almost everything about the way we were doing life. You know, a year ago, about right now, we were all pretty much on cruise control. The economy was booming, and we felt like we had an advocate in the White House for a Christian worldview, and COVID interrupted all of that, and our churches were closed, and our schools were closed, and our businesses were closed, and it caught us off guard. And I think it entered a season where, for some of us, we began to realize that we had taken so much for granted. You know, the government is not our source of freedom and liberty. Mm-hmm. God is the one that brings justice to our lives. And I think we had turned our eyes off of that a little bit, and God in his mercy has given us an opportunity to refocus. And I pray that we'll continue to humble ourselves and turn to him.
Yeah, amen. For those that hear that message, and we may perceive it as, well, I'm struggling and I'm scared, and yet we know fear is not part of God's plan.
No, it's not, but it's a frightening season. You know, when God commissioned Joshua, one of the most difficult, I think, job descriptions in the Bible was replacing Moses. And God said to him more than a half a dozen times, be strong and courageous. And then he reminded him two or three times not to be terrified or discouraged. And I think we face some things that are frightening. And if we forfeit our God perspective and our trust in him, we will be terrified. So it isn't that the circumstances we're walking through aren't frightening. We just have to recognize that our source of security and the thing that anchors our future is stable in spite of all the instability around us. So if you're afraid, you're not weak, or you haven't failed. Joshua was afraid, or God wouldn't have told him not to be frightened. But I think if you're afraid, you just need to recognize the adversary, and there's an opportunity to put our trust more fully in the Lord.
That wraps up this edition of the Christian Outlook. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend about our program. Send them to ChristianOutlook.com to subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for joining us today. Our program has been brought to you in part through our partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. For executive producer Russell Shubin and producers Charlie Richards and David Posehn, Mike Cook and Alex Garrett, I'm Kevin McCullough. Join us again next time for the Christian Outlook. When she was just a girl, she expected the world.